we get the hour underway, though, by welcoming into the program an actor, director that, well, you know from films like Fargo, Zodiac, The Founder, the Oscar-nominated Trial of the Chicago 7, the wonderful film he directed with Harry Dean Stanton, Lucky, and television shows from Drew Carey to American Horror Story, Big Sky, and let's be honest, every good television show that you've watched in the last two decades, he probably made an appearance somewhere along the way. We are so pleased to be joined this afternoon by John Carroll Lynch. John, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for asking.
We are deep and abiding fans of character actors, love them here, and I think you're just the best there is, although I wondered, does that designation sell you short? Does it do you a disservice to limit you because you've had lead roles before?
I think that's an outside distinction that a lot of actors don't really tend to make, whether or not they're character actors or leading men. I can tell you there's a designation called movie stars, and that's a very special designation as our television stars. But that's a different kind of kettle of fish that also is driven by success in terms of fame that has nothing to do with the craft of acting.
Well, you keep so busy, and I think it was Bryan Cranston who told us that he stays busy because, first of all, he remembers when the phone didn't ring, and he's convinced that there will come a time when it stops ringing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it definitely will. I mean, there's the adage in Hollywood is who's Jack Lemmon? Get me Jack Lemmon. Get me a young Jack Lemmon. Who's Jack Lemmon? And for your younger audience members, they're now Googling Jack Lemmon. Eventually, unless you're Jack Lemmon, people stop ringing. You know, because the stories start to wrap out. You know, they start to. You know, there's only so many times you can, you know, be in a hospital bed until people think maybe somebody else should be in that hospital bed.
Well, I want to talk about a couple of the more current things you've done and then go back a little bit. I absolutely love The Trial of the Chicago 7 and your role as David Dellinger in that. Now, you had worked with Aaron Sorkin on The West Wing. How was this experience?
Well, I very much enjoyed working with the cast and with Aaron. Aaron is a master craftsman in terms of the words, and not just the words of a screenplay, but the way it moves. It's a very dense screenplay, and yet when I read it and when I saw it, I was swept into the story, and I think the audience is too. He creates characters so effortlessly with such small, important moments, and he did that in this film. And he also knows where he's going. He knows what points he wants to make, and he makes them.
David Dellinger is such an island of calm for most of the film, but then he's just had enough of Julius Hoffman and the whole enterprise. And to me, that when he lets it all go, that was one of the highlights of the film.
Well, thank you. Dave Dellinger was one of the most morally incorruptible people of the 20th century. He was an activist from the time he was, 18 until the time he died. He actually protested the next convention in Chicago with Abbie Hoffman's son. So he never stopped, and he was always deeply committed to passive resistance. And he did in the trial get physical with people particularly on Bobby Seale's behalf. He tried to prevent them from dragging him from the courtroom by putting his body in the way. So it was very true to what happened in the story that he'd had about enough of that.
The cast has already won the Ensemble Award from the Screen Actors Guild, the Oscars, of course, this weekend. You've been through award season before. Obviously, it's a little different in the time of COVID.
Very different in terms of presentation and availability. You know, I've had the good fortune of being in films that have been nominated and shows that have been nominated. And the best part about that is that you get to go and congratulate your fellow actors who did such a wonderful job in the other films. You know, people that you haven't gotten a chance to work with or that you have and that are friends, you can go hobnob with them over drinks and just enjoy their company in a relaxed and collegial atmosphere. But unfortunately, that's not been the case this time. So I haven't been able to, you know, congratulate personally you know, friends, you know, people I've worked with, colleagues like Viola Davis, and those I have not gotten a chance to.
We had Dee Dee Pfeiffer on the show a couple of weeks ago, and she's been on a couple of times talking about Big Sky, which is just a terrific show. Now, we don't want any spoilers in case people have not watched the season yet, but let's just say this. Rich Ligarski is a great character, and safe to say a man convinced of his own moral superiority?
Yes, he is. He is as morally certain as Dave Dellinger. He's just wrong about it. That's one of the joys of being an actor, is that you can go from, you know, one side of the spectrum to another, and try to express the humanity that everybody deserves expression of. Rick Ligarski has been one of the funnest characters I've ever played day to day. Because he's just simply willing to do and say anything to get what he wants, and I find that fascinating and heartbreaking, and to work with the actors and to work with the words, David Kelly's words, it's just been a joy.
And there are hints along the way from other characters that Rick was not always this way. That there was a time when he was on the straight and narrow. Do you create and fill in that backstory for yourself?
I've come to understand for myself that it's best not to get too specific about a backstory, because you end up arguing about something that's never on screen. I have my own secrets about that, and I'm sure that the writing staff does too. But it's clear from the words, and it's clear from interactions, that at some point, Rick Ligarski was a decorated Montana State Trooper, and that's one of the reasons why what happens in the story can be such a surprise to everybody, because they never expect it coming from somebody who's described as Dudley Do-Right.
We're talking with John Carroll Lynch here on Downtown. Well, let's go back, if we can, to Fargo. Now, you had already made a number of films before that, including Grumpy Old Men. You were in Minnesota working at the Guthrie Theater when you read for the part of Norm Gunderson. Is that right?
That's correct. There was a spate of movies that came through because of tax credits, to be fully honest. I mean, the state of Minnesota was vying for film and television production and was doing quite well with it. While they had the what they called the snow bait, and I was cast in a few movies in a row, and it was an amazing experience because I had been working as a theater actor up till then, and for the first 6 months of the year that Fargo was made, I made a living as a film actor in Minnesota, and that's what kind of convinced me to maybe give it a try, and it was nice to time my arrival in Los Angeles. You know, talk about fortune, just as Fargo was nominated for Best Picture and Fran was nominated for Best Actress.
It's such an incredible movie, beautiful, dark humor, a lot of violence as well, and yet there is this this island of calm and sanity whenever Marge and Norm are together.
It's this. It's a cold movie with a warm beating heart. Mm. They're like the kettle stove in the middle of a frozen winter. Two of them, and that safe haven and that really abiding love, the thing that Norm and the relationship that she has with Norm provides, is safe haven. She can go out and see some leg bouncing in a wood chipper and know she can go home and be safe.
Did I read somewhere along the way that Joel Cohen told you Norm doesn't care about Marge's work?
Yeah, that was a really great note because I didn't quite understand it until I saw the movie. His lack of interest in her work means that he is never going to ask her, how was your day? And so it doesn't matter for him, it doesn't matter. He loves her and supports her no matter what she's going to do. And I think that's I think all of us crave that kind of unconditional support.
You had such a wonderful role as Steve Carey on the Drew Carey Show, which I still think is one of the best comedy ensembles in television history.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, the group, I've never laughed harder working in a place than I did on the Drew Carey Show. It was one of the funniest atmospheres I've ever worked in, and such a joy to work with everybody. And also, it was such a circus because every week was something outrageous was going to happen, whether it was a live episode or a dance number, or whether or not, you know, whatever outfit I was going to be wearing or whatever outfit Mimi was going to be wearing, something was going to, you know, a bear driving a truck. They didn't care about reality. They cared about humor and they cared about heart. And I think they did both so beautifully on that show. I'd love to see people get an opportunity to see more of that show, because it's a great show.
Yeah, why isn't that in syndication anywhere?
It's a mystery to me. There must be somebody must be complaining about rights somewhere. That's the only thing I can imagine, is that there's some, there's some title problem. I don't know what it is.
I'm a huge Albert Brooks fan, and I love your work in Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World. That must have been an incredible experience to make that journey.
Well, it was, and you know, obviously, it was to work with him. He's a comic genius, and to be able to do that and get to see India at the same time, I mean, who would say no to that? I loved working with him. He was so terrific to work with, and so brave in his work. I mean, he's so daring. You know, we did these scenes in the Agra train station. And an actual train came in, and, you know, I don't think people can really understand, unless they've been there, how packed a train is in India. I mean, it's to the gills. And Sheetal Sheth, who played one of the other characters in the movie, he said to her, hey, let's try to use this. He said to the Steadicam operator, he said, follow us down here. Let's try to get on this train and then just pretend to get off. And she went down, and in Hindi asked if they could get on the train. And there was just a person there, a commuter, and he just grabbed the two handles of the right at the door and just pushed enough people back into the car to give us room to get off of the train. So it was just a stolen shot, really. And that kind of bravery and that kind of willingness to do something so, out of the plan was really a great lesson in how to direct.
A very different type of role as Arthur Lee Allen in David Fincher's Zodiac. I think it's just a tremendous film, and a couple of great scenes that you're in. And my favorite is that scene in the hardware store with Graysmith when so much is said with just looks.
Yeah, and said by the filmmaker, you know, that's the flip side, the meticulous and prepared nature. I've never worked with any other director. I've worked with directors as accomplished and as meticulous, but never quite so relentlessly meticulous as David Fincher. And when Graysmith comes into the hardware store, and the character that I play, Alan, appears, he's behind a sign that says "Your featured item," which makes me laugh. I think that's hilarious.
When a director is that detail oriented, is that in a way freeing for you as an actor?
Well, it can be. I think you have to accept the parameters of any individual director. They're the one laying the floor that you're going to dance on, and there are rules to that floor, and you have to intuit them and understand them and play along with them. And like Albert Brooks's, improvisation of a staging at that moment, you need to be able to go with that. And you also need to be willing to do 60, 70, 80 takes of a scene if that's what's necessary. You have to be willing to collaborate with the director and the director's vision. That's what the joy of it is. And that's what I learned when I directed Harry was, you know, not only is it that way that you have to, the actor has to collaborate with the director, but you know, the director changes their their direction to match the actor as well. It's a translation in both directions.
I had a friend who is an actor in Boston, and he had a small part in Mystic River, and he to this day raves about Clint Eastwood and the fact that on the first day, Clint knew everybody's name, including the extras. Of course, the crew had been with him for 100 years, but he said it was just such a supportive environment for actors.
Without a doubt, it was. And I had the good fortune of doing scenes where Clint had a lot of dialogue, you know, which is not very usual for films that he's acting in. We had a 4-page scene, and, you know, we actually improvised a lot in that scene. It was a rare occurrence in Malpasso Pictures to have something so loose. Most of the time, you get one or two takes, and you're on your way, you know. But the day we were shooting his funeral in the film, spoiler alert, he, you know, set the stage and set the crane shot, and he looked at the monitor through a run-through, and then he goes, okay, we're ready, and a stepladder was brought, and he climbed up into the open casket, and he laid down in his suit. And then he said, the cameraman said, rolling, and he goes, all right, whenever you're ready. And then he just laid down and put his hands over his over his heart. And Christopher Crowley started the eulogy, and then at the end of the eulogy, there was a long pause as he laid there, and then he popped his head up, and he goes, did we get it? Did we get it? Can we move on? Well, we're moving on.
We're talking
such confidence in this crew.
Talking with John Carroll Lynch on Dante. Well, you touched on Lucky. Your directorial debut is such a wonderful movie. Now, I understand you were cast to act in the film before they asked you to direct.
Yeah, I was going to play Joe, the diner owner, and then Drago and Logan, the writers, asked me if I was interested in directing it instead. They wanted an actor to direct. They wanted a character actor to direct it. And they asked me if I would do it, and I jumped at the chance.
Well, it's a beautiful movie, but obviously some challenges. First of all, in working with an 89-year-old actor, and an actor who's famously said that, well, he doesn't act.
Yeah, he lied about that. I mean, he lied about the fact that he didn't act. I think he did that mostly so directors wouldn't give him notes. I think that's mostly what he did it for. But also, you know, his age was a challenge in terms of timing, in terms of scheduling. We needed to give a lot of air around the work days. You know, we got extra days off each week because he needed time to recover, because we would send him, you know, like when we were walking in the desert in the town, he walked 6 or 7 miles on that day, and that was just in the takes. You know, that was just from, you know, action to cut. He walked a lot, and, you know, he was 89, and, you know, for a guy who smokes the way he did and drank the way he did, it was incredible, you know, that he was alive, let alone able to walk 7 miles in a day. It was pretty impressive.
Could you tell in the moment what a magical scene you had when David Lynch and Harry were working together?
The love that they expressed to each other, the warmth between them, between David Lynch and Harry Dean, is so palpable when they're sitting together that it just poured through the lens, you know. And that's what was needed for the characters, and it was so great that David said yes. And he did it only because of Harry. You know, he would show up for Harry just as Harry had shown up for him. And he was so great in the movie and so respectful to me as a first-time director. I couldn't have asked for anything better. And also, it really helps the movie, because that warmth that they have together, when he's not there in that chair like Statler and Waldorf at the end of that bar, the audience really feels the lack of presence there. They really feel that empty chair, just like Lucky does.
What was the biggest surprise in being a first-time director?
I don't know. I don't know really what the biggest surprise was, but the funniest thing that happened was on the very first day of filming, we were working with Ed Begley as the doctor and Harry in the doctor's office. And the thing was set, and the camera said, the sound said rolling, and the camera said set. And then there was this pause, and I'm looking at the monitor, and Harry's sitting there, and then he turns and says loud enough for me to hear, "Well, say action, man. That's why you took the gig, right?" So you say that? I had forgotten that was my job.
Minor detail there.
It was a minor detail. I never forgot it again.
You have created some of the most indelible television characters in recent memory on the several seasons of American Horror Story you've been a part of. Whether it's Twisty the Clown or Benjamin Richter, scary, scary men, but also what makes them great is that these are well-rounded characters, and you understand that they're part of a journey.
You know, one of the bylines, the slug lines of American Horror Story is all monsters are human. And they have, in my experience, stayed true to that for those two characters, for Twisty and for Mr. Jingles / Benjamin Richter. They become fully rounded, and they do what great horror does when it's done really well, when you have an opportunity like Boris Karloff did with Frankenstein. They not only create fear, they create pity. And you find those characters, it's in the writing, you just find those characters really, it's sad what's happened to them. And it's sad what they've become. And I really have appreciated that in terms of how they've written them and certainly how I've tried to express them.
When you join these worlds that Ryan Murphy creates, do you know where you're going, or do you just accept on faith that you'll get somewhere that will have a big payoff?
He has been true to his word about where it's going in all circumstances that I've worked with him. And his work as a director is so sumptuous, and so his worlds are so fully realized and so elegant. I trust him implicitly. I'll go where he tells me to go and find out what it looks like when it's over, because he's earned that trust. Sometimes when you're working with directors that you don't know or that you're not sure about, you have to ask a lot more questions.
As a stage actor, you're thinking about things like projection and blocking. When you're doing TV and film, it's a different ballgame. But I saw an interview where you said it made a big difference when you stopped worrying about some of those things and just realized that the professional crew was going to make sure that you were in the scene, you were on camera, you were on your mark where you needed to be, and that allowed you to just focus on the character.
Yeah, and directing has made that even more clear, that the process of acting is captured by the camera and captured by the microphones, by the sound department, and the director is in charge of those things. And so, as an actor, I'm free to explore the moment-to-moment life of the character as it unfolds. And that's the job, both on stage and on film. The joy of film is that you can do it with such a wonderful freedom of movement, and the moment unfolds so delicately. On stage, you have the same opportunity, and you have the responsibility and the authority to make sure the audience sees and hears it. So you're in charge of what the end of the thing is going to look like. But you're not in charge of that on film, and you're not in charge of that on television. That's somebody else's job, and you have to trust that they're going to do a good job with it.
You've worked with so many friends of our show. You did a couple episodes, three episodes maybe, of Veep with our friend Tim Simons, another great ensemble.
Sure. Yeah. That show was so fun to work on. She's a hero of mine as an actor. Julie Louis-Dreyfus is a hero, and Tim is amazing on that show. And I can't help with the Matt Gaetz thing to think of Jonah. I can't help but
exactly
think of the fact that, you know, they started that show when it was a satire, and they ended that show when it was a documentary.
Well, yeah, I remember Tim telling us before the last season, you know, we can't do anymore, because how do you satirize something that's already ridiculous?
It was so clear. They were like, they already anticipated so many of the things that actually happened.
Well, including COVID.
Including COVID. That's right. He was patient zero in the last season. It's insane.
And you also did, and I have to think it was an interesting experience, working with our friend Ileana Douglas and Madonna on The Next Big Thing.
Oh, yes. Ileana's great, and she's so funny. And that show was such an interesting one. Because, I mean, John Schlesinger was, you know, a legendary director, and it was exciting to work with him. And, you know, Madonna was Madonna, you know, so all of her entourage comes with her, and it was interesting. Ileana really kept me laughing throughout that experience in a way that, that I will always cherish from her.
When will you be back in the director's chair again? Anything in the works?
I'm working on a couple of things now. Working on an independent film in my circumstances is like going to somebody and talking them into building a house on their land, and you're going to build the house you want to build, and they can't tell you what it is, what it's going to be, or what it's going to include. And would it be okay if they paid for it? That's the kind of conversation you're having. So you really have to find, you know, the right individuals who are willing to take the ride. And I'm just about to go out with something that I'm excited about. I don't want to jinx it. And I want to make sure it would be a job where I would not only direct but also act, which would be a new experience.
Well, we wish you luck with that. Good luck as well in the Oscars on Sunday. And we're so happy to get the chance to talk with you. Been a big fan of your work forever, and you always turn in top-notch quality, but especially honest performances. Thanks so much for being with us, John.
Thank you very much, and have a good day.
John Carroll Lynch with us on Downtown.